One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
G-A-L-D-E-M.
This song is good.
Welcome to Growing Up with Galdem, the show where we explore the stories, struggles and triumphs of growing up as people of colour. I'm Natty Kasambala.
And I'm Nayella Arboyne. Each week, our guests respond to old diary entries, letters, notes or texts from their younger selves,
helping us understand how their coming of age made them who they are today. Morning, Nai.
Morning, morning. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
I have an announcement, and I think you'll be pleased to hear it. I think everyone listening will be pleased to hear it. Now that we're four seasons deep, ask me what it is.
Oh, sorry. What is your announcement, Natty? thank you,
Nai. Thank you so much for asking. I have actually started journaling. I'm pleased to announce. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What will you talk about now on the podcast that you've started
What
journaling?
Am I going to talk about? I'll be like, you know what? I know what you mean by that because I too have a journal.
I'm a journalist.
A journalist. In every sense journaler. Of the word. A journaler, a journalist, all of it. I have finally...
What prompted this? What the hell?
Honestly. I mean, just life. Struggling with life. But no, you know what it is? I think, as I've said roughly 1,000 times on the podcast, like, my problem with journaling is I have no discipline in anything, in any aspect of my life. And the idea of routine, I just fail at it all the time.
Misconception about journaling.
It really is. And I think I've always loved having the books. I've loved like the stationery. I've loved all of these kind of like practices around it. But I always felt that like, because I couldn't be consistent, I was failing at it. And when I would fail, I would give up. And then I just have these like amazing pretty books with 3 pages written in them and the rest of them are empty. And then I got one earlier this year. Like I made my own and like made the designed the cover, all of this stuff. Yeah. And again, I wrote 1 page in it. Never went back. And then this thing was just like taunting me in my living room, just staring at me like, you're nothing. you're going to be broken forever. And then something really embarrassing happened to me this week. And I was so full of adrenaline that I was like, I'm not going to be able to move on with my life tonight until I get rid of this energy somehow. And I sat down. It was like 11 p.m. I sat down at my desk And I just journaled like everything that was that I was feeling, like broke it down by like by points, was like making jokes, was just like flowing it out. And by the time I finished, I literally did not care about the thing that had just happened to me. And it just felt like a real breakthrough.
I love and I'm that. Like, that is why we do it.
Yeah, I was like, this thing actually works. And like, maybe it's okay that it's not a diary and it's not like a day by day, play by play of like everything that I do and feel, but like just a place to put your feelings when you can't call someone or text someone or like send a 10-minute voice note. So I finally see the beauty of journaling.
I love that for you.
Are you journaling at the moment? Are you going to be journaling for your New Year's resolutions? What's the vibe there?
Oh, yeah, I will be. I like to always write a list.
Do you?
Things for like possibly the next year. But it's never like big goals like, I need this to earn this amount. It's like just small things or reminders or things to feel like. I think sometimes I often forget to like feel gratitude. Mm. And so I think that's something I'm kind of concentrating more on rather than I need to change myself to or all these bad things are happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kind of being like, these are some good things that are happening. I should feel grateful for my friends and family and where I am and just kind of, so I will definitely be doing a gratitude roundup, I think.
I love that as well. Yeah, I've never been a person to do resolutions. I find, and maybe this is very Buddhist of me, I find wanting things just terrible. Just the more you want, the more disappointed you are. So I always find that every time I do resolutions, I'm like, I feel like I'm failing when I don't achieve them. I just stopped. But I think your way of kind of doing it is maybe something that I am going to look into. Just, I think even more so like you're saying of, you know, being grateful, I really like at the end of the year to look back on the year we've had and just be like, okay, like I have not processed the fact that this is the first year I've lived in a country without my parents or the first year I've supported myself fully freelance, you know, and like just actually processing that like, yeah, maybe you cried too much this year, but like maybe there were reasons for that and maybe that was just
we had reasons to cry.
We had reasons and now we have grown from that and now we can like move on to the next reason to cry.
I love that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Bring on more tears in 2023.
Yeah, on a happier note though, our guest today is of Yorkshire and Macanese descent. Don't get that combo very often.
They can bowl a ball at speeds in excess of 70 miles per hour.
Wow, 70 miles per hour. Wow, that is pretty fast. That could be, are we talking about bowling? Are we talking about rounders? Are we talking about baseball?
You know what? Maybe one of our facts might answer that question.
Okay, not this one though, but maybe the next one. This one is that they have solved a Rubik's Cube live on Sky Sports in just 33 seconds. That must be like near a world record.
That's wild. So also a genius.
Yeah.
And lastly, when they first played in the Women's Cricket Super League, our guest chose the shirt number 95 as a reference to the racing number of Lightning McQueen from Pixar's animation Cars.
Wow. Love that. That could only be the one and only Izzy Wong.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, how are you?
Yes, good.
Really excited to have you on. I thought it would be cool if you could maybe start by telling us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and how you like show up in the world.
Yeah, so my name's Izzy. I'm a professional cricketer. I don't know what else to say. They always say, like, what do you kind of do? And I'm like, well, I kind of wake up and then I go to training and then I get a coffee and then I go back to bed, like... And then I just wake up the next day and do the same thing.
A simple person with simple
needs. I guess
we love that.
That kind of sums it up. I'm a Liverpool fan. Sometimes I eat Cocoa Pops for breakfast. And my coffee order is an oat flat white. So I think that sums up most parts of my daily being.
Love that. I wish I was a flat white girly, but I'm like, I feel like I'm getting ripped off. It's too sad. You are, I think, our first athlete. Can you talk to us a bit more about sports and kind of like your relationship to it?
Yeah, so I've always kind of loved sport, I guess. I've played like all sorts. My dad is a massive Liverpool fan, football. So when I was younger, it was like kicking a ball around in the garden. I quickly realised I wasn't very good at that. So I played in goal because you don't have to use your feet as much until I was about 14, 15. But yeah, I started playing cricket when I was about 5 or 6, maybe. Played tennis from pretty much when I could walk until I was about 11. I dabbled in a bit of hockey and a sport called fives. I did, you know, kind of bits of athletics here and there. Yeah, I just kind of got involved with everything. I think I had a lot of energy. So it was like, oh, do you fancy doing this? I was like, yeah, go on then. Sounds good.
Mm. That's amazing. I always remember being like so jealous of the people at my school who were just like naturals at every sport, no matter what week it was. They could just go in and they would just play incredibly, and I was always that person who's like, get me in like specifically the 100, that's my only one lane, and then everything else was like, it's a bit of a wrap.
I feel like the 100 is pretty flexible though. There's a lot of skills in the one, well, I mean, there's one skill in the 100, but you can kind of use it in so many other things.
Yeah.
Like get you the ball in rugby on the wing and you'd be down like a flash.
Okay, yeah. It's just the other rules that, you know, get in my way. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I just specifically remember just always being like, oh my God, there were just certain people in your school who were just like smashed every sport. Do you remember at what point you kind of discovered that cricket felt like it could be a real kind of pursuit after that, and kind of like making that choice to pursue it fully? Was it something that was played in your household growing up, or was it mainly at school? Like, I'm interested to know a bit more about that specific journey.
Yeah, so not a single member of my family or my direct family played cricket. So I've got a younger brother who's 5 years younger than me. So obviously I didn't really, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I started playing because my older brother played. Well, Buster's 5 years younger than me, so I didn't learn too much off him. And yeah, my mum and dad didn't play. I went to an after school club completely by chance. They did like, I think it was on Thursday afternoon for an hour, and it was like tennis balls and plastic bats and whacking around and getting muddy. And that just sounded like the best idea to me. So I was like, yes, Sam, let's do it. And then I just kind of kept going, so I enjoyed it. Kind of as I got to an age where I had initial thoughts of what I wanted to do when I'm older, the England women went professional. So that's like the top 15 in the country. So it's kind of always like if I'm, you know, obviously if I'm really good, I want to play for England. Oh, and if I could play for England, then I'd be able to do it as a job. That'd be really cool. And then kind of when I got to 16, 17, and there were whispers of like domestic contracts, like full-time contracts. So until then it had been like, you'd kind of get a contract for like 6 weeks in the summer. Then you'd have to have like a job kind of for the rest of the year effectively. But yeah, kind of when I was around 16, 17, there were whispers of, you know, these contracts going to come in, they're going to change the game. And it was like, oh, that's cool. Like I was obviously still at school, I was doing my A-levels. So I was like, you know, still, you know, I'm quite keen to do it, but I wasn't necessarily expecting to do it without playing for England. In my head, that was like, you've got to play for England if you want to do it as a job. And then I left school during COVID. So I was like at home on my 18th birthday, and I like woke up to a phone call from my boss from West Midlands Cricket saying, we'd like to offer you a contract. And I don't think she knew it was my birthday, because I kind of, there was no mention of it. There was no like happy birthday present, which I think I'd have played on if I was offering someone a contract on their birthday. It's quite a nice start to the day. And yeah, I kind of went downstairs after that and had some Cocoa Pops.
It's just, I think it's just mad, obviously, that we'll get more into the kind of like gender split of sports and all of that. But you don't even always think about the fact that it's like most of the talented, amazing people who don't get into sport, it's not because they can't or wouldn't want to. It's because, you know, you don't necessarily always get the same kind of security from a future in it. So the fact that that's kind of happening in real time as you were growing into your like strengths as a cricketer is just like mad. But yeah,
I think I was just obscenely lucky, because I'm literally, I know I'm quite lucky because of my age, but I also get to play with people who have kind of both sides of it. So like some of my captain at regional level, Eve, she is 30, just turned 30. She didn't sign her first contract until she was 27. So she's had to kind of work out, she's had to have a job and kind of train alongside it, and she's still kind of got to the level that she's at. And like in my head, I'm like, oh, that's bonkers, because she's, you know, playing at the same level as us, and she's been having a full-time job for 10 years alongside that, and that's a massive commitment. But then on the other side of it, one of our girls, Davina, she's just signed her first professional contract at 16, and she's like still in school. You know, I look at someone like Freya Kemp, who's just made her England debut last summer at 17. And these guys have kind of got it from day zero. And you look at them and it's so exciting, because you think, well, if I kind of look at the generation above me and think, well, look how far they got without any support. And then I look at the kind of my age the year, you know, a couple of years below, we're just beginning to come through and thinking, well, if we have this support from when we're 18, from when we're 17, 16, 15 even, then like how far could we push the game? And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I guess it's similar to football as well. It's that kind of gender gap means that a lot of these people are just doing it because they love it and not because they thought there was going to be a career or any end in sight. So it's kind of amazing to hear that like people are coming up now and they're getting contracts straight away at 16. They don't have to wait that extra 10 years. So I guess, do you think things are getting better as far as women's cricket?
Oh, absolutely. I think the game is definitely growing. I think that obviously comes with challenges. We've kind of been, I'd say, caught in a bit of a limbo the last few years because there's not the money to make everyone professional at once, because obviously that's kind of, you know, that's a massive sort of funding thing that, you know, there's not that sort of money lying around. So it's been a quite gradual, you know, at the start, there were three of us from each region that was contracted for the summer. And then another two got added to that in each region. So each region had five professionals. And then last winter, it went to six professionals. And now we're at seven or eight, I think, with that looking to go to 11 by the time the season starts. So, but we've been in a kind of phase where it's, you know, we've got some people in our team that are full-time professionals. And then some people, you know, we've got one girl in our squad who works for the police. And, you know, some nights she works for the police in the night, and then she'll come to training at 9 a.m. having been, you know, on patrol all night. And it's been trying to manage that dynamic, I think. But certainly the way it's going, it's really exciting because, you know, even I keep saying it, but how much the game's grown in the last 3-4 years with it kind of being half professional, suddenly that's, you know, I think about in 5 years' time that's going to look completely different, and that's really, really exciting, I guess.
Women, am I right? Sorry, that sounds really like...
can't they just skim some of the money from their mums and push it over?
We need like more socialist sports. Share the resources.
I don't think it's just a sport-wide issue, that, but that's a different
podcast. Well, that's this podcast too, but we'll get there. Yeah, something else that I'm really interested in is your heritage. And I think our producer was kind of talking about like the narrative of like British Chinese, but you obviously specifically have heritage, Macanese heritage, I believe, on your dad's side. I just wanted to hear a little bit more about that, and if you have like a relationship with that, have you been able to dig into it, and just anything you had to say there.
Firstly, that is incredible research, because I don't think I've ever been asked about my gran being from Macau, but
wow,
yeah,
really?
Genuinely, that, like, fair play. Aww,
that's the Gaudan way.
Shout out, Aoiwan.
Shout out. Nah, it's... I guess it's something that I never really thought of, because that's just me and that's just kind of my family. And it sounds strange, but you don't really... I guess you think that's your normal. And then it's only when you start meeting other people and who kind of do the same thing as you that you realise that, you know, they're from different backgrounds as you, but actually what impact your own background can have and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was... Like, everyone kind of says, oh, like, did you find it harder because, you know, from mixed race family or whatever? And I'm kind of like... No,
it's your whole frame of reference.
My mom, dad, my grandma, yeah. And granddad's. But certainly, like, I remember going to, you know, see my grandma, and she'd cook the most amazing food. She had like a lazy Susan in her house. So like we'd go and she'd put on like a massive spread of like, there'd kind of be everything. I'm quite a fussy eater. And my brother, who obviously I spoke about earlier, he's 5 years younger than me, but he's like super adventurous. Like we go to restaurants as kids, like as a family. And when I was kind of like 12 and he was must have been 6, and we'd get like 3 adults menus and a kids menu, and I'd be eating off the kids menu, but like we'd have to order it for him because otherwise they'd be like, you can't have an adult on a kids menu. So yeah, she'd cook everything from like, you know, all sorts of like noodles, seafood. Like she cooked like lobsters. She used to drive up the M40 to our house, come and like cook for us basically, and she'd like pick up these lobsters in the way and just put them in the boot. So if you were driving behind, you could just see these lobsters like that hanging out a windscreen.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she was an amazing cook, and kind of, I'd say, between, you know, her and my dad teach me about kind of my family on his side, because they're kind of all over the world, so I don't necessarily know them as well as my mum's side, who are kind of based in England, and, you know, we'd go on holiday and see them and stuff. And yeah, it's pretty cool to, I guess, hear what people before you have done. And obviously, you know, I've kind of quite lucky that they've done some quite incredible things and I get to eat their noodles.
Food is definitely like such a, I think, like a language of love for immigrant families or like immigrant households to kind of pass down that thing. It's so, oh, that's such a nice story about the lobsters.
Also, I guess, speaking of family ancestors doing incredible things, are we right to think that you have a spy in the family or had a spy in the family?
Yeah, had a spy in the family. Not anymore, unless my your brother has got a secret story.
Was it your great-great-grandmother? Great-grandmother?
Yes. So I think it was, I always mess these up, and it's really bad because people ask me about it all the time, but I think it's World War II and she spied on the Japanese for the British government, I guess, and ran some sort of spying network. I don't know too much about spies. I'm a cricketer. But no, we've got...
I think that's the point of spies, to not know much about them.
Is it St. George's Cross, the medal you kind of get for doing good things?
Yeah.
We've got her one of them. It's like downstairs. I remember kind of being in the Scouts when I was younger, having the Remembrance Day parade. And one year my dad let me wear it, but told me I wasn't allowed to jump up and down in case it fell off. But yeah, no, it's pretty remarkable lady, I guess. And I, from what I've heard, she didn't take much shit from anybody, which is kind of, I guess, well, certainly to my grandma, who's no longer with us, but she didn't take any shit from anybody. She was great. And I guess that's that kind of attitude. Obviously, we're not in war times, fingers crossed, at the moment. But I think kind of that attitude has certainly been passed down. And I guess, yeah, to be able to run a network of spies against the Japanese in a world war is something that's pretty remarkable, actually.
Yeah.
That sounds like a film. I would watch that.
That's a film I'd really sounds pretty mad,
doesn't it? But, you know, I kind of get asked on, like, podcasts and things, and they're like, oh, you know, we want to talk about cricket and, you know, what you do so cool. And then they're like, oh, my God, your great-grandma was a spy. And I'm like, doesn't it make me look pathetic? I just run around a field and chase a ball. But, yeah, it's really cool.
Your grandmother was a spy so that you could run around a field and chase a ball. It's all connected. It's all connected.
We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this for the extract.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I think it's time for us to get into your wonderful extract, if that's okay. Before you read it, it'd be great if you could give us just a little bit of context about the one that you've chosen for us today.
Yeah, so I was about kind of, I guess 13, I'm not too sure, probably around the time. So I went away to boarding school at 13. So I had quite a big change in, you know, I went to the local school that's a mile down the road. to kind of being at boarding school a couple of hours away from home and coming back every 3 weeks. So it was probably quite a big change in my life around the time. I'm not too sure when it's from, but like I said, massive Liverpool fan kind of all the way through my life. So that, I guess that's been pretty constant from day one. I love watching Liverpool. Anfield is one of the places where I'm most happy. My whole family supports Liverpool and we share our love for the club by travelling together when we can to watch them. The highs of watching football are irresistible. The lows are really painful. I've been going to watch them for years. I feel part of it all. It's not just my mum, my dad, my brother. It's all of us. We win together, we lose together, and that's the rest of the Liverpool fans too. It feels great to be part of something bigger, to be part of a community. You might not know the other fans with you on the cop, but you all want the same thing. When we sing You'll Never Walk Alone, it feels like we're all together. Here in a packed out Anfield on a European night makes the hairs on my back of my neck stand up. And when you feel that connection with the players too, you know that they're giving it everything because they love the badge in the same way that we love the badge. I think Liverpool's connection as a club between the players, the manager and the fans is a very special one. When they win, it's a win for all of us. And when they lose, we all share that pain. It's a special football club to support and to share that with your family. I'm very happy that Liverpool are my team.
Yeah, thank you so much for reading that out for us. What was it like reading that extract kind of years after you first wrote it?
You say years after, but I don't think much has changed, to be fair. I still, yeah, love going to the football. Obviously, it's been challenging with COVID the last few years and then kind of playing, I guess, more and more. It's been, you know, at the weekends, so it's harder to get to the game. But no, definitely, I don't think much has changed since, you know, 13-year-old me. You know, last year, I went away to Paris for 2 nights for the Champions League final and I had to kind of, I think I had to get the train there and the plane back. And I got the plane back the morning of the game I was playing in that evening. But I'd missed the last 2 Champions League finals we got to. And in my head, I was just like, I can't miss another one. You know, especially the way we've gone this season. At the time, I thought, you know, if we don't get to another one in my life, then I'll be gutted that, you know, I missed out because I didn't want to risk the flights or whatever. I mean, yeah, obviously not the result we wanted, but I'm so glad that I made it there and, you know, I guess my whole family was there as well, which was quite special. You know, meeting, we all kind of came separately. So like I had to get an earlier train there because by the time I booked it, all the trains were booked out, all the planes were booked out. So I had like a day in Paris, just like kind of milling around. And then my dad joined me. And then my mum and brother came the morning of the game and all the kind of dad's mates who he's been going to the football with since he was my age were there. And I bumped into one of my mates from school, like in the ground that I hadn't seen since I left. And it was, yeah, it was really, really quite, like it feels like a community. And yeah, it was really like 100% glad I went.
Interesting. And do you remember like where the love of Liverpool first started? Because I remember my dad was an Arsenal fan, but like we never really know how he got there. And it just kind of felt like a slightly random choice, maybe an unlucky one that we just all had to kind of stick with for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, well, not at the moment. Tell you what a time to be an Arsenal fan.
I know, but how long did it take?
Oh, so my dad supported Liverpool. I get a lot of stick for this actually, so I'm quite pleased to clean it up publicly because like no one from my family is from Liverpool, and obviously at the moment we've been doing pretty well the last few years, so everyone just says, oh, you're just a glory supporter. But genuinely, my dad's been supporting them since he was my age. So he lived in London. He's obviously, you know, half Chinese. And he just loved football. He'd try and just go to whatever games he pretty much could. He loved playing. I think he played football all the way through and played, you know, Sunday league stuff when he came out of uni and stuff. And he just loves football. He coached my brother's team now. He loves, lives and breathes it. Spreadsheets for everything. Absolutely loves it. But he kind of just went to games whenever he could. But kind of as a mixed race guy in London, you know, there are some kind of, I guess, sets of fans that probably it wasn't as welcoming as it potentially could have been. And he got tickets to a Liverpool game one time. This is how he said it to me anyway. He just said the fans were so good to him and just kind of welcomed him in and everybody felt friendly. And he felt like he was kind of, I guess, part of that family straight away. And he just kind of kept going, I guess. And, you know, I don't know how long he's been a season ticket for, but it's certainly since I was born. He put me on the list for a season ticket the day I was born and I've still not got one. I'm still 7,000th in the list, having been on it for 20 years and 4 months, whatever. But
that is wild.
Yeah, absolutely wild, isn't it? But so, yeah, he's literally been supporting them since then. And then I guess for me and my brother, you know, we've been going since we were I think my brother went to his first match when he was 6 months old, something like that. And yeah, we've kind of, I guess, felt the same sort of sense of community that he felt those years ago.
So lovely. I'm always so like amazed by like diehard football fans. I'm like, but it's just a game. It's just the ball in a net. And then the Euros happened and I was like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, indeed. Yeah.
I'm crying. And I don't even know these people or understand the offside rule. So it's so beautiful that you've kind of built this community. And yeah, so interesting. I think for a lot of people of colour and black people, it can feel a bit hard or testing to be a fan or something when, you know, it feels like a lot of the culture around it doesn't like us and all the players. So, yeah, it's great that you managed to find a home and community within Liverpool. You said you're around 13 when you wrote this. Yeah, what was life like around that age? You're in boarding school. Yeah, what were your primary concerns and needs?
I guess going away to school was quite strange in a way. Because I'd kind of gone because, you know, I love my cricket. The school was really, really, you know, it had like a cricket centre. It was really good for cricket. So I was like, oh, sound, it's cool. But I guess until I kind of got there, I thought that like everyone would kind of like be like me and not know anyone. And then I kind of got there and there are things called prep schools. I didn't even know prep school was a thing when I went. So a prep school is like a primary school, but a private one. And they go until 13 because most boarding school start at 13, not 11. So like a prep school goes all the way into a year. I did not even know. So like all of these kind of people that I was now in school with had gone to prep school together since they were like three. And I'd not even thought about that, to be fair. I'm not a massive socializer. I've never been that sort of person that has like loads and loads of friends and like, I don't know, goes out for Nando's with their friends on a Friday, I don't know. I'm not that sort of person. I'd rather...
You're even just like trying to think of a scenario. You're like, I don't know, what do people do with friends?
But like that's never been me. So like when I was just at my local school, it was like I'm friendly with people. Like I'd kind of go to school and kind of get on with people, but I never really took that away from school. Like the only person I saw from my old school outside of school was a girl called Paige who lived next door to me, and like her brother was best friends with my brother, so like we kind of convene, and like me and Paige are the most different people you ever. I think she does dance, that was her sport, she was like a dancer, and I was like, I love football, I love cricket, and we kind of bonded over the fact that we had to walk the same mile to school every day. And like, to be fair, we still get on now. I still see her about and stuff. And but like that was the only kind of socialising I did outside of school. And then to be like, right, I'm going to boarding school and now I live there. I find that really, like, I find it weird for the first few weeks because I was like, why are they still here? Like, I woke up this morning, I had breakfast with them. I then went to lessons with them, had lunch with them.
Go away.
We played sport together. Then we went to dinner together. And then we did our homework together, and now we're having a shower, not actually having a shower together, but like we're having a shower in the same building, we're brushing our teeth together, and now we're sleeping in the same room. Like, when do I sit on
When's
my own?
Me time? Yeah. When's Izzy time?
Hundreds of siblings all at once.
Yeah, but I kind of, at the start, because obviously I didn't know anyone, so I remember lying in bed in my first night looking at the ceiling. I remember vividly looking, there was a gap in the curtains, and the street light was coming through, so I could kind of see shapes on the ceiling. And I just remember lying there like this, looking at the ceiling, being like, I'm in a room of five strangers. What if one of them's a serial killer? And that was just a chance I took. And luckily they weren't. But yeah, it was like, at the start, it was definitely challenging. And but I think, like you said, it's like having 100 siblings. There were 60 girls, 70 girls in my boarding house, all the way from 18 to 13. So at the start, it felt like I had 59 older sisters. And then in the middle, it kind of felt like a family because, you know, I knew the ones above me really well. I was kind of getting to know the younger ones. And then, you know, towards the end, it was actually like, oh, this is, you know, these are girls that I've literally lived with for 5 years. And kind of, I guess, like myself and Paige, we're all very different. You know, some of us, like there was me who kind of like played cricket and watched Liverpool. And then there were some people who like played lacrosse and braided their hair. And there were some people who loved singing and did that. And there's some people who ran across country, and there were some people whose genuine passion for life was Latin. But we all got on so well.
That's prep school vibes right there.
I love Latin.
And I was just like, it's a dead language, mate. Grow up. But I didn't actually say that, but I thought it a lot. But yeah, it was quite, I guess, nice that, you know, through being forced to spend time with each other, we actually forged, you know, some really strong friendships, which I guess you'd only get from, you know, watching people brush their teeth for 5 years, from sleeping within 3 meters of somebody, from, I think you kind of just, you get to that level with them where you just know them inside and out, and you could see someone, you could watch them walk into the kitchen one day and be like, oh, they're having a rough day. Like, maybe I'll make them a cup of tea or something. And it's kind of those unspoken things that I guess I'd probably not really had that much until then.
Yeah. I'm really interested in, like, do you feel like it shaped you or brought you out of your shell in some way as well?
100%. Like I said, I've never been, like, that social. Like, I hated speaking. Like, I'd never do this, be on a podcast. I wouldn't read in class. I wouldn't kind of do it. Like, I was chatty enough, but as soon as it was, like, formal speaking, I was like, absolutely not. And then, obviously, I kind of got more comfortable around the people I was with, and within a kind of standoff with an English teacher, I ended up doing a bit of public speaking. And I guess that's actually, of all the things that have kind of helped shape me from being at Shrewsbury, actually that English teacher when I was 15 telling me to enter the poetry reading competition and take myself seriously, and me being like, well, fuck you, I'm going to take this seriously, ended up winning the thing. Actually, that's, for me, that was like, at the time, I was just like, fuck you, I'm going to win it, because you've told me I'm not going to win it because I'm not taking myself seriously. So fuck you, I'm going to win it. But then I look at myself now, and had I kind of not got over that fear of I'm going to speak in front of, you know, at the start 20 people, and then it went to 100 people. And, you know, now it's like, you kind of, you know, sometimes you play a game on Sky, and if you do well or you do really badly, one of the two, Sky want to speak to at the end. And it's like, you kind of stood there and, you know, there might be a million people watching that. And I don't think 13-year-old Izzy would have been able to do that. But so it's not actually, I guess, the cricket or the things. It's, you know, sometimes it's those less obvious things that actually have had a massive impact. Because I think that's how the game's going to grow. I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here, but I feel like things grow because of the personalities in them. Because, like you say, I don't know any of these people. They're just throwing a ball around on a field. But actually, if you can kind of, sounds silly, but if you can show a bit of yourself, then maybe somebody will be able to relate to you. And yeah, then if somebody can relate to you, then suddenly they're invested. And like, for me, I loved watching Fernando Torres as a kid. I had like longer hair than I do now. I used to like wear a headband, long sleeve Torres shirt. I'd like run around just because I loved his kind of vibe. And like, he's the first Liverpool player I like. Was completely upset. I've still got like a Torres shirt in my room, like on the wall, and he left 10 years ago. I cried myself to sleep the night he left, but like, he was the first one that I remember like connecting with. And yeah, I like sometimes I'll like see a ball and I'm like kick it, go, Torres, like that. just like, do you know what I mean? I feel like it's those connections with the athletes, like that's part of the reason I love Liverpool. And maybe if I can show a bit of me, you know, somebody might watch that game by chance once and be like, oh, you know, I like her earring, that's cool. Or like, she's smiling, that's cool. Or like, she said something funny and took the piss out of herself on an interview. Like, that's cool. Like, that's funny. Like, maybe I'll watch again. And I think that's how the game grows, because like, nobody would watch robots play football. Nobody would watch robots play cricket. Like, nobody watch robots do anything, because robots, there's nothing about them. They just learn machines like that. And it's like, oh, that's great.
That's a very interesting point.
yeah.
Give it 100 years. No, that is so interesting. I think even for me, it was the same. It was like Thierry Henry and like Van Persie and then like Fabregas. And like, I can literally name you the squads of like the formative years. They were very good looking as well. That did help. but they're also like, yeah, it's like a human connection.
Obviously spent a long time away from your family in boarding school. How did that kind of, if it did, that separation change your relationship with your parents or your brother?
Yeah, it's a good question, because like, I felt like, I guess it's prepared me quite well for being away now. Like, we go away on tour for 6 weeks, and I'm like, oh, that's fine, I've done this before. Like, I don't necessarily miss home when I'm away now, but I think at the time, I didn't necessarily miss them when I was away because I was cool and I was a teenager and I was completely self-sustainable. But it was when I came home that I was like, I was. It took me a few kind of days, sometimes a week maybe, to like find my feet again. And even little things like they started watching like Vikings on the telly. Like every night they'd watch an episode of this TV program and it'd be like, oh, like we're going to watch TV now. Like this is what we do. Like, do you want to come watch with us? But they're like 7 seasons in. So I'd be like sat there and be like, what am I watching? And I guess it, like I said, it kind of prepared me quite well. But it was certainly took, you know, even my mum admits it now. I'd come back from school and be really grumpy and just sit in my room until I kind of felt like I could come out again. And I think, especially maybe with my brother, obviously there was quite a big age gap. So, but now like suddenly he's a man. Like I kind of left for school and he was like this. How old was he when I left? He might have been like 8. And now, like, I kind of came back during COVID and he was kind of like, maybe not a teenager, but like, he not like started to grow. You know what I mean? He hadn't started to grow. And then, like, with cricket and stuff, I've kind of been here, there, and everywhere. Like, I spent 5 months in Australia last year. I kind of, you know, I'll spend countless weeks in traveling around in hotels and stuff, playing around the country. And then I feel like I notice him growing up so much more because I've not been there. And, you know, even if it's like I go away for a week and I come back and I'm like, whoa, you're four inches taller. Or, you know, your voice has got all squeaky like this. And it's pretty cool to I guess, be able to watch. But I guess it's something that you really kind of notice at that stage in his life. Yeah. Even like we got a cat last year. And when we got her, you could like hold her in your hand. And, like, I went away for 5 weeks playing and I came back and she was, like, a small cat, but she was firmly a cat as opposed to, like, a ball of fluff. And then I went away for 5 months, like I said, and came back and I'm like, oh, my God, you're a real cat. Like, please forgive me for going away. And she's like, meow.
Yeah.
Takes me to trust.
I guess it's, like, and also, the like, the older you get, I guess you become even more aware of, like, how fast time can pass. And that's such a specific way of, like, it's almost like, I don't know why it's reminding me of, like, you know, in a Disney film where you watch a kid grow from like an adult and they just show you like snapshots and it's just like, oh, and now they're big. Yeah, literally. And they're just like slowly transitioning. It's like you're kind of seeing that happen in real time. I'm interested, like, do you have any kind of like routines now or rituals or like things that you do with your family to like kind of connect or with just home in general to make you feel to help you feel more settled and more connected when you are in your home, in the country, you know, with your family, with people you love?
We always eat the same, like, I think it goes back to me being a fussy eater again, but we always eat the same kind of meals. I'm not sure if that kind of counts, but they always make a joke that they can, so I spend like a lot of the time I spend in the week away at training and then I spend the back end of the week at home. My dad always jokes that they can have mushrooms at the start of the week because I'm not there. But as soon as I come back, they're not allowed to have mushrooms because I don't like mushrooms. So, but I guess it's kind of, yeah, like we come back and we eat the same, well, we eat things that I like, I guess, which is quite nice. What do we do? I don't even know. Like we go to the football. Like that's like quite a big thing that like if I'm around and there's a game, it'll be like, right, let's get to the game. Or, you know, if there's a game on, we'll sit and watch the game. And that's probably the only time me and my brother actually sit down and watch telly is when Liverpool are playing and we'll like sit down next to each other. And he's like, he's got the same like lucky hat he's had since he was 7 and he's always in his lucky hat. And like, depending on time of game, he's either in his dressing gown and his scarf or just his scarf. Not obviously just his scarf, but, and like that's quite a big, I guess, bonding time. Mum will do the ironing. Like, you know, we're going to win when Mum does the ironing. It's when Mum's not doing the ironing and Liverpool are on the telly that we think, oh, we could be in trouble here. Like, you know, quickly crumple some shirts so that they can get ironed because the ironing seems to be the lucky charm. But yeah, I guess it's the little things.
Oh, it's lovely. Also, what's your go-to picky eater favourite meal?
Chicken and chips. You can get it anywhere in the world. Chicken and chips. Straight away. You can't
it's
get it wrong.
It's actually always chicken and chips with fussy eaters. It's always something chicken about and that. Chips. Yeah.
Everyone asks if I can cook, right? And I always say, like, I like what I know, and I know what I like. So, and I can cook what I like. And, you know, there are variations of things that I like that, you know, I can cook and I feel like I do a pretty good job on them. Like, if you ask me to cook something that I didn't like, I'd be like, well, why would I cook something I don't like? Because I don't get to eat it. That's part of the enjoyment of cooking for me, is to eat it at the end. But yeah, chicken and chips, it's also a staple.
Doesn't seem like a very athlete answer. What would your coaches have to say about that?
Well, it wouldn't be chicken and chips to them. It'd be chicken and potatoes. And that's a big difference. Okay.
Like steam. Some kind of steam situation.
Yeah, I guess it's not often we get to reflect upon moments in our lives where we experience pure joy. So is there a time in your childhood that you can remember that you felt absolute joy?
That's a big question, isn't it? I remember having fun. But I actually think, like, the moment you're kind of prompting me to remember, I wouldn't say it's my childhood. So this summer I made my England debut, which obviously is something that I'd kind of dreamed of for, like, my whole life. And it was in a test match. So for those people who don't know cricket, test match is, like, some people call it the purest form of the game. So men get to play loads of test matches, but as women, we get to play maybe once a year if we're really lucky. But sometimes it's, like, once every 3 years. Like, they're really rare. And it's, like, quite a big deal because, like, you get to wear, like, whites, like, traditional whites, and you, like, play for, like, 4 days, 5 days from this year. And it's, like, it's a whole hoo-ha. It's a whole thing. It's great. But, like, everyone's, like, test cricket is the pinnacle. Like, test cricket's up there. It's great. So I was lucky enough to make my debut in a test match. They'd been quite, like, an emotional day, I guess, because before you play your first game, you get a cap. So there's an amazing video somewhere on the England cricket Twitter, I'd urge you to find it and watch it and cry, it's great, of me getting presented my test cap by Catherine Brunt, who was, no shame, she was my idol growing up. And so that was, yeah, really kind of special moment, I think, for both of us. I think we both probably shed a tear or two, and it was amazing. But then later that morning, I came onto bowl and I got my first wicket, and it was like, kind of, it was what you dream of. Like, it was bowled, so it was like the classic kind of, like, the sound of the ball hitting the stumps. And then I just remember, like, kind of just, like, just running. And I remember hearing the ball hit the stumps and then just, like, running and being like, oh. Because, like, you always kind of worry that, like, you're not going to get one. And I felt like every ball I was like, come on, like, get one and get the first one out of the way. And once you've got one, then, like, if you never get another one, that's okay. But, like, you've got one. And I remember getting that wicket. And for that, like, maybe, like, 10 seconds of, like, kind of just running and then, like, all my teammates kind of coming in and, like, rubbing my head, and my best friend was running drinks. And I remember her, like, sprinting on, and she was in a bib with, like, the drinks holder, and she's, like, sprinted on and come and gave me the biggest hug ever. And it was, like, she's one of my best mates. And to kind of, I guess, like, I remember seeing her, like, run on and be like, oh, yeah, like, I've done it. And that was really cool.
I'm gonna go look up that video and have a cry today. Yeah, that's amazing. That's, like... Yeah, it must be the stuff that dreams are made of, especially for you guys. Oh, my God. Our final questions are, thinking about that 13-year-old self who's kind of adjusting to boarding school life, and I guess, like, almost in a way, your extract feels like a way of connecting with your family when you can't physically be with them, and that thing that kind of, like, connects you all together. What advice would you give to that younger self if you could?
I guess say yes to more things. I'm quite like I think I'm an honest person. If I want to do something, I'll say yes. I won't hesitate in saying yes. I'll just be like, I want to do it, yes. But equally, if I don't want to do it, I'm like, no. And people are like, oh, no, you should do it, like, it'd be good. And I'm like, but I don't want to do it, so I'm not going to do it. I think that's so ingrained in me now that it's actually quite, I guess it's kind of hard to be like, oh, I don't want to do it, but, like, I'll give it a go. And I actually think if I'd younger me had been like, oh, like, don't feel that comfortable doing it, but, like, I'll do it anyway, then maybe I'd be naturally saying yes to more things, more meals now other than chicken and chips. But
maybe you'll be down Nando's on a Friday.
Yeah. Very, very chips. How good.
They are delicious. And very last question. What would your younger self think about where you are now?
Oh, they think it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's great. I think it's great. I think the whole idea of it is, like, sometimes practically it's like you have a bad session and it feels like the end of the world. And, like, suddenly you're, like, just on the way home in the car and you're just, like, crying. And I'm like, why am I crying? Like, I bowled some balls that weren't very good, but, like, there's just bigger things to worry about. But, like, at that time, it feels like the end of the world. But I think actually when I take a step back, and actually one of the biggest things that highlights this for me is going out for brunch, because we don't work office hours. So like I could get a text from a mate being like, do you want to go for brunch tomorrow? And I'm like, yeah, cool. And then we go out for brunch and it's like, oh my God, this place is empty. This place is amazing. Why is it so empty? And it's like, because it's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. That's why it's empty, because people have jobs and it's 11 o'clock on Tuesday. But like, I'm doing this amazing job where I can go out and get brunch whenever I want and travel the world playing cricket, which is what I love, and, you know, see my best mates all around the world and kind of playing catch with them. Like, how cool is that?
Love that. Thank you so much, Izzy. Lovely. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
No, thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, that was so sweet. Izzy was so sweet.
Yeah, we finally had our first athlete.
Yeah. And now I don't know whether it's just like, it must be me projecting, but now I just feel like I have to go to the gym.
I mean, do you know what's so weird? I went to adult gymnastics yesterday.
Did you? I was watching a TikTok about adult gymnastics yesterday.
It was, yeah, because I used to love it when I was a child and I was like, I can cartwheel. Okay. Time to shine again. Not realising like 20 years had passed.
Honestly.
I thought I was going to end up in A&E. It was
so it your first
fun.
Class?
It was
oh my
first
God.
Class.
I love
And they
love
were trying
that.
To make me do the splits.
Bro. So,
I wasn't so ready.
You come from a gymnastic background?
I'd barely say that. I was just a stretchy kid with too much energy that liked to cartwheel.
Okay, cool.
But I did a bit of gymnastics as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I like sports when I was younger.
Okay.
I did gymnastics
for years and I did dance for years and then I was like I was a sprinter, but I hated sport and I just really found it like, I think I hate that organized aspect of this, and I think we might have talked about it once on the show before, like I just, the idea of PE and like organized sport and sports day and competition and it all being enforced, like it genuinely gives me like war flashbacks. But at the same time, I also really enjoyed, outside of that, the actual act of movement. And like, I am also like you were, I'm like, I just wish I like kept some of that up and just like, it didn't leave at 20 years. And now I was the same, I could do the splits. Now I'm like, I can barely touch my toes. I can barely tie my shoelaces. You know what I mean?
The thing of like, girls stop sports around 14 or 15, usually.
Why do they say that is?
Yeah, I think because you're going through puberty and becoming a bit more self-conscious
and
kind of how boys are treating you.
So
I think there's kind of a teetering off, which is sad because I really enjoyed a lot of sports. I'm just mainly like, I'm not a group sports girly. I don't want to play games with other people. I want individual sports, swimming, climbing, gymnastics. I don't want to be on a team.
100%. I 100% agree with that. If I could play netball alone as well, I'd probably do that.
And I win every time.
And I'd win every time.
This has been an II Studios production. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can sign up to become a member at gal-dem.com for access to exclusive discounts with our favourite brands and partners, early access to tickets for Galdem events, an advanced copy of our annual print issue, and so much more. Make sure you're following us on all major social media at galdemzine or visit our website at gal-dem.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.